Let's close the door so that we can what's happening there next to the door? Which one are we starting with? The green paper? The consultant? Seeming that the time is truly against us, I think you have to just to summarize quick because we are still having two documents to deal with, and let's look at the time right now. Which one, what time are we starting? Then over to you. Is it you, Mbo?
My colleague, Mr. Nyameko Mbengo, will be leading us in presenting that item on the appointment of consultants. We'll try and give you an executive summary. It's a long presentation, but I've asked him to take us straight to the point.
Thank you, Chair. While we still have a technological challenge, I think I will just use the hard copies. I will not take you through the whole presentation because of what you have already requested, Chair. Going to the first slide, the first slide indicates the fact that the appointment of consultants follows an intense supply chain management process. All the units in the departments or directorates who want to appoint consultants have to do a gap analysis before approval, indicating reasons for such appointments of consultants. And the appointment of consultants now gets reported within the department in a quarterly report. What we have then done, Chair, after this overview, was to just give you the numbers in terms of previous financial year audited report and in terms of the current financial year. In terms of the previous financial year, we appointed about 42 consultants, and the total amount spent in terms of the financial statements of the department was 102.1 million. And then in respect of 2013-2014 financial year, we have already appointed 53, and the amount is 108.6 million. What we have then done, Chair, was to go through all of them, just to give an indication to the committee what was the purpose of appointing these consultants, what were they appointed to do. And we've gone through all of them, the purpose and why they were appointed. If, for an example, I take the next slide, redesign of the website of Human Settlements Department, the next one, audio-visual services for photography, and DVD production of Governor Mbeki Human Settlements Award, facilitation and implementation of a multimedia advertising campaign, management of the functionality of the website of the National Department of Human Settlements. That is in respect of the first year, 2012-2013. We have then split the years, 2012-2013, and then 2013-2014. And when we go through 2013-2014, Chair, I think it's slide number 14. And the first slide in that year, it talks to the purposes of our appointment. For an example, the first one is the development of an informal settlement upgrading program for municipalities. The second one being the development of a policy as well as housing cooperatives program and legislative framework to integrate, align, and develop a housing cooperative policy. And those all, Chair, are the purposes for the appointment of the consultants. And after listing all of them, Chair, we then indicate on slide number 22 that there are CETA or IT-related projects, where in terms of the CETA Act, we have to work through CETA, we have to appoint CETA to address those. In respect of those, Chair, we follow the prescripts, we approach CETA, and then CETA decides whether to appoint a consultant to assist us or not. We have not included those because they are not appointed by the department, but they are appointed by CETA to assist the department. We have just listed the areas where CETA comes in to assist the department. For example, the HSS operational system and assisting provinces on the use of HSS, the computer support, HSS services, and all of them. So those are IT-related projects where CETA assists us, either through the appointment of consultants or through their own teams. And on slide number 23, Chair, we are indicating the reasons for the appointment of consultants. The first one, Chair, mainly is inadequate capacity within the department in terms of both technical skills and the number of personnel. Secondly, Chair, is the need to assist other spheres of government to deliver on human settlement programs. What we have found, Chair, is that as we go closer to other spheres of government to assist them, you tend to run out of the necessary skills and you end up having to appoint consultants to assist you in addressing those needs. On slide number 24, Chair, we talk to the processes in place in monitoring these consultants. First, service level agreements are signed with all the appointed consultants. All the service level agreements are vetted by our legal services unit. The department has established a contract management directorate within legal services unit, and that directorate has started operating this year. And lastly, Chair, respective units are responsible to monitor performance of contracted service provider. If you are a chief director, you have requested and the accounting officer approved for the appointment of consultants, your responsibility, among others, is to monitor the performance of those consultants. What we have added, Chair, here was that is that in future, at the end of, we used to do this, but somehow we stopped. And what we have decided, Chair, was we need to actually put that back in place, a requirement that when we come to the end of a project, which was where consultants were appointed, the responsible unit should submit a report in terms of whether the objectives were achieved, whether things went wrong, and in that case, we are then able to liaise with Treasury if something went wrong, so that those consultants which were appointed can then be uploaded on the Treasury list of consultants which should not be used by government in future. That's what we are currently doing, Chair. And thank you very much, Chair.
It's a big document. Thank you very much. We have been straight to the point. Honourable members, that's the presentation. Comrade Bowman, Makhalapa, Stole, Manjobe, Mashishi. You have to follow that one. Honourable Bowman.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, thank you very much for this presentation, but I also need to say that it's very difficult for us getting a story like this as to how authentic this is. For example, now just right here on your very first page, number 5, you talk about the purpose for the appointing the consultants, redesign of website of human settlements. Then you've got management of functionality of the website. Now, you know, are those similar things? What is this? I mean, so, and then I would go here, to your total number and the costs in 2012-13, you've got 42 and that's the cost. I think we'd need to have some indication of those. I know they were listed in that annual report at the back. I recall that at the time. Now, you know, I don't know what those would fall under. And then you've got in 2013-14, you've got an increased number, and yet by then your vacancies are being filled. Because, and I understand the need for consultants, and also not only for the vacancies, but there are certain skills that you require and you need to use a consultant. And I think that's the kind of thing that we would need to see in a report. But I do not find it very helpful to have all these pages of things, you know, as they set out here. So I would just like some comment here about the vacancies, because now those vacancies are being filled, but we're using extra, more consultants in the 13-14 period. And then, you know, do we get value for money? I don't know if we're getting value for money just by reading this. But if there was something, you know, that tabulated the each of the 53 or the 42, you know, that would give us an indication with some explanation as to why that was needed. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I think this is a bad story. Because of, I mean, the issue of value for money. And I think when one looks at this, it seems as if there is a duplication of services provided here. You know, the one that Honorable Bowman referred to, I mean, there are others that are looks like, you know, it's a duplication. You know, it's like more of a daily bread thing when it comes to consultants. And I do understand that for the sake of time, you have just tried to make sure that you condense this whole thing. But the way it looks, the reason why I'm saying it looks like a daily bread is that even the increase in the amount of, you know, consultants from 42 to 53 and using around 108 million, I think this department should be one of those departments that is using a lot of consultants. I understand the issue of using them in terms of rare skills and rare technical things, but there are some of these things that, you know, you are appointing consultants for just no reason. And I think one would want to understand the reasoning. Why is the use of consultant linked to the issue of vacant positions? And I think you are very much clear that we've been saying you need to fill these vacant positions. And it looks as if deliberately some of these positions are not being filled in order to fit to the consultants. I understand last week you told us that the reason why you would rely on consultants or not filling vacant positions was that it's a rare skill because of its built environment and, you know, its highly technical skills. But I think that is now perpetuating the fact that you need to rely more on consultants. So I'm not quite very much happy with this level of consultants that we are using. Firstly is the issue of value for money. Secondly is the issue of duplication of some of these consultants that we are using for. And thirdly, and most importantly, is the issue of vacant positions. I think we are using consultants more to fill the space of those vacant positions that we are not filling, and which is quite a concern. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, first of all, it is we have been discussing this thing for a long time about the consultant. But instead of reduction, it increasing. That's the worrying factor, Chairperson. And what I want to understand from the department, if they are talking about debtor system maintenance, does that need a consultant? And the security guiding service for department buildings. These are not for administration scenarios. Chairperson, training of officials, because we see this is 50, 12 officials that need to be trained. There are 30, there are 60. I think we are not serious now. The department is not serious.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think some of my points have already been raised, but I'm sorry, I really apologize. I don't know what happened. Okay. Yeah, I think my first comment, let it be positive. I think on slide 2, we do appreciate that third bullet there, where you say that consultants now get reported on the quarterly performance report. Well, at least that is monitoring, close monitoring. Let's hope it is happening. That's appreciated. But otherwise, I think I have the same problem, for instance, with the increasing numbers of consultants, you see, because this financial year alone now, you've got 11 more consultants than you had the previous financial year. And, of course, the cost is a variance, a whole difference of 6.5 million. Does it mean that next year you must expect a higher variance, you know, in terms of the cost? As Mr. Stoller says, the question of a consultant is not only raised by us, but I think also the Treasury is concerned generally about the use of consultants by departments. We are definitely appealing to departments to do the best they can to reduce, you know, the use of consultants. The question of the functionality of the department systems, I think that has been tackled. You talk about, you see, in some cases, you see, in my opinion, your points are a bit vague. For instance, when you talk about the Governor Mbeki Awards, you say you needed an independent auditor to assist. Then the question I ask myself, what is so involved in this assistance? What does this assist actually mean? You say they assist with the awards. And well, one is concerned because that costs us money, that assistance costs us money. And also, I was wondering whether it had to be an independent auditor. Can't it be done by the internal auditors? You know, we raise these questions in our minds as we read on, because we are trying to see where, for instance, it can be possible to reduce the number of consultants. I also feel, you know, on slide 8, for example, that some of those tasks, the training that is identified there in number 8, can't it be done by the more experienced staff in the department? I mean, we are now 20 years down the line, obviously. There are some staff members in the department now who are so knowledgeable about the work of the department that if new members come in, they can train them. And I want to believe that they can even train them better than consultants brought outside. So why don't we do that in order to reduce, rather use our own members of the department to train the new incoming members? That's one other suggestion, Chairperson. Coming to, yes, slides 11 and 15, I put them together. Can I just check what 11 is saying? With your permission, Chairperson. Oh, yeah. The implementation of the RHIP, you see, you are using consultants there. And actually, it reminded me of the other presentation we had the other day, where it said that you are going to get CUBE to come and advise you on technology for sanitation in the rural areas. The question I ask myself is, where is CSIR? Do we have to go and get Cubans out there to come and show us how to build toilets, you know, in the rural areas? You see, because when we went to the CSIR 2 years ago,
we saw exactly the amount of research CSIR has done in order to solve the problem of sanitation in rural areas. So what is this now about consultants again on the RHIP? When we've got CSIR right here, why can't we use this CSIR, for instance, to solve the problem of the... I don't know what the problem is, because we are saying that we are going to have consultants on the implementation of the RHIP. So I ask myself those questions. Maybe you can clarify me on that. Chairperson, question 9, I mean slide 19. Which questions? Slide 19. What are you saying there? You had to get consultants to conduct the training on mediation to members of the rental housing tribunal. You know, these are the things which I'm just wondering if they cannot be done by members of the department. Sorry about that. Members of the department. But in any case, the real question I have here is, you have already done it, but at the same time, the legislation on the amendment had not yet been passed. We've just only passed the legislation. And there have been some amendments there, for instance, to increase the number of the tribunal, the committee, the tribunal structure itself. It means that there are still some other members that we have not trained. And we are going to get consultants again to train the new members of the tribunals in the various areas. Is this what we are doing? Is this really good planning? But I'm adding this to the point that I'm just wondering whether also tasks like this could not be done by some member or some members within the department itself in order to reduce on the numbers of these consultants. And lastly, Chairperson, the question of the inadequate capacity within the department, which also leads you to employ more consultants. Again, this is another point, you know, that we find very worrying. We are also 20 years down the line, and my own opinion has always been, why can't the department train its own people, sponsor your own students to universities, or even to outside South Africa for that matter, where you need certain specialties? And supposing we had started, let's say, for instance, in 1999. Okay, I won't say 1994 because we're still very new. We're all trying to learn how to govern. But supposing we had started in 1999 or even in 2004, sending students to tertiary institutions in the name of the Human Settlements Department, or sponsoring students to outside South Africa where we think that we need more specialization, which we don't have in the country. How far would we be now, having produced our own people, you know, instead of using consultants? Strengthen the department by training your own personnel, you see. I don't know, but for me, I always think this should be possible. The Department of Health is doing it. It has now sent quite a good number of students to Cuba to train as doctors. So they are adding, you know, to their own, to whatever resources we have in the country. Why don't we do it? We've got an item in the budget in human settlements which speaks about scholarships or something like that, you know, to tertiary education. I don't know what it is exactly, but in my opinion, I would have thought that out of the budget, some money must be taken out to sponsor students to go out and study the areas that we are short of in the department. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think most of the questions have been asked, but I just want to add on that one, maybe on the number, that is it necessary for the department to add more consultant? Also to support what Mama was saying, that training their own, getting people outside, students outside the country. Thank you, because most of the questions have been asked. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think, Honorable, Mamanjobe has come up with a long-term solution of sponsoring some students so that we can be able to reduce the big number of consultants. As members, we understand that there are some areas that you really need consultants to assist you, for example, the security guarding service for the department. But in some other areas, really, I think it's the waste of money. And there is too much money spent for the consultants. I would like to know, Honorable Chair, if there is any plan in place to try and limit or reduce the number of consultants in the department. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Members. Seemingly out of the questions of the members, you can see that members are not really happy about the consultants. If I remember very well, when I joined this committee in 2011, we were talking about consultants, requesting that the department must try and reduce the use of consultants. But up until today, you are still, instead of trying to reduce, you are increasing them. Was there any reason for that? No. Over to you for the responses. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think there are specific questions that we will have to respond to, and I think there are questions that are put forward as recommendations of what we need to do. We'll attend to all of them. Let me start with the generic ones. Why is it necessary to use consultants, and why is the number going up of consultants? I think if we put everything into context, maybe we break it down by branches, you will notice that maybe what would have helped is to have a table that demonstrates the value that is associated with the service providers that we have appointed or the consultants that we have appointed. You will notice that if you look at vacancies, for instance, you'll find that most of the vacancies are not in the support functions. Most of the vacancies are in the line function, for instance, the program and project management unit of the department, which is a recently established unit. That's where the bulk of the vacancies are. And this has a lot to do, again, with the fact that we're recruiting professionals, the town and regional professionals. We talked about this last week, and that is why you find that most of these vacancies are there. If you put a value again of some of these service providers, take NASP, I think NASP is listed here, the informal settlements upgrade. We have 25 service providers in 50 municipalities, and these are professional service providers, town, regional planners, engineering, consulting engineering service providers. These are all professionals in 25 of them, and that number is going up because we haven't covered all the settlements, the informal settlements that we are upgrading. And I think we made this point several times that it takes a little bit of time to get to upgrade an informal settlement. So you count the dwellings, you count the beneficiaries, you screen them, you do geotech assessments of whether the area is upgradable or not, before you get to hit the ground and you build a house or you provide a service site. So we're using these engineering firms, consulting engineering firms, to help us to assess the state of each and every informal settlement. So in line, we would love to have all of these specialists, engineers, consultants, in-house at our disposal, utilize them. But they don't come cheap. They don't come cheap. That's the challenge that we have because we are in the built environment. You compare ourselves with National Treasure in terms of the utilization of service providers as well. They have a unit called Technical Assistant Unit, Treasury, where you find all the specialists, all the service providers who are assisting Treasury to be on top of the budget, the performance of the budget. And all what we're trying to do in line, because I'm starting with the line function aspect of our work, is to make sure that we have all of the expertise. We don't come here with excuses and say we don't have capacity. We do have the budget to go and buy that capacity in the market. And that's the irony, that's the challenge that we're faced with, because we are in the scarce skill environment, we're in the built environment. So most of these consultants that we're using, some of them are consulting engineers. I'm starting with the ones where the biggest value is, because if you look at the NAS budget, it is 97 million rands. And we're using that 97 million rands budget to hire consulting engineers to help us with packaging the plans, planning, designing, before we get to appoint the contractors to build. That's the work that we have to do. If you look at others, your CETA is a state-owned agent. We're using CETA to deal with some of the IT-related work. We're using CETA. Unfortunately, we cannot use any other. Some of the service providers and the SLEs, we sign with CETA, and CETA assists us there. But also in terms of training, supply chain, I think you've seen that we've listed supply chain, and you have a problem with this space that we're using service providers to train people on supply chain issues. This is an evolving space. Again, supply chain is a very difficult part of procurement in government. And that is why Treasury, they have come up with the Chief Procurement Office, something that wasn't there. Because they have realized that supply chain is one of the most difficult aspects of our work. We're starting to use service providers to train, because there are new issues that are coming up, to manage the demand process part of it, the supply part of it, to understand the entire chain. You use this, but I think it has to, at some point, and this is the recommendation that you are making, that at some point you have to draw a line and say, at least we have adequate number of people that have been trained within the department to do supply chain management work. And those people in turn, they must train others within the organization. And the challenge that we have is that, once people in government are trained, they get snatched by other organizations, they get snatched by parastatals, and they get snatched by the private sector. Government is always used as a stepping stone, for people who want to start their own businesses or to join other organizations. Then there was a question about CSIR. I think that question is a valid question, but remember, the bigger part of CSIR is R&D. That is what is called research and development. They invest a lot of money in research and development, and CSIR's funding model, business model, is such that they have to do cost recovery on 70% of the work that they are doing. They only get subsidized 30%. So in other words, if the CSIR operational budget is 100 million, it means they need to raise 70 million. They will get 30 million from government. So the CSIR model is also a cost recovery model. We're working with them this afternoon at 6 o'clock. They will be attending our Troika meeting on sanitation. And they are there to advise us where we're putting alternative technology sanitation options. We first go to CSIR and ask them to advise us. We don't just go and buy a new alternative technology model, because it has its own pros and cons. So we do work with CSIR, but the services that they are giving to government department is not for free. We pay for it. Even utilizing the CSIR venues, we pay for it, because their cost recovery model forces them to do that, to recover the cost. So it isn't for free. On RIP, we used service providers. I think you've seen the RIP report, that we had the management consulting firm that was administering the work, even though they haven't done a very good job there. The reality is that once you have a number of contractors, you also need people in the organization to manage them, because it's no use to have an army of service providers if you are not going to contract manage them. So you have to contract manage them. We're overseeing a budget of about 30 billion rands as a department, and that is 16 billion rands of the HSDG, and then we have 10 billion rands of USDG. And that gives you and other grants, like now we have the new grant on sanitation. If you look at that budget, all of the budget that we have, the one that goes to the entities, we have to oversee that budget, the performance of that budget. And the current skills, even if we were to fill all of the positions in the line function, we will still need a significant number of service providers to help us to manage this work, because this is specialized work. If it were in any other department where the bulk of the work that we're doing is administrative work, is support work, maybe one would justify the fact that, the budget for consultants is high. But if you consider the fact that we have 30 billion that we have to look after, and we're only spending about plus minus 100 million rands on consultants, by any standard, that is not a very big, significant figure. It is still a small figure. You've put a lot of pressure on us as a department to jack up the monitoring of provinces. You're saying we need to follow the money. We need to go there. In the short term, we will have to utilize the service providers. In the long term, we will have to think hard about the skills, the OSD skills that we need within the line function, people that we need to recruit. We're going to have to think hard about how we pay those people so that they stay, because most of them would prefer to chase lucrative contracts in Dubai or in other sectors or in other countries, because they know that government cannot afford to pay what they are being paid in the private sector. The system, there was a question about the maintenance of the systems maintenance or management and the design. The two different things. One is the design. Like in any other environment, you design it, then somebody has to maintain it. And I'm assuming that the bulk of that maintenance is done because we don't have the expertise, and this is what we always do. And I think my colleague talked to this. He says you assess first whether this can be done in-house, and Treasury is very strict about this, that before you go out on tender on anything, you have to assess whether it can be done in-house. Systems, IT space is an evolving space. Even the CETA, which is a government entity, the work that we are using when we appoint service providers to do IT work, CETA goes out to the market and they're using service providers. So they will second service providers to us as a department to do the work, and we pay for that. We have to pay for it. The training institutions that government has created, Parliament and others, they also go out to the market and get service providers to do the training for us. So even if you use government existing entities, they also rely more on the market to be able to provide these kind of skills because of the nature of the scarcity of the skills in the market. The recommendation that we need to go to have an exchange program, as they do in health, and I think Uma Njobe is making that recommendation for the second time now, that we need to follow the same model that health has adopted. Instead of just getting engineers from Cuba to come and work here, we need to send the young graduates from our institutions to get training in Cuba. And I think that's a valid recommendation. I don't think one would want to contest that. The other question about filling vacancies, I would want us maybe coming back to this committee again, or any report that has to be forwarded, maybe let's break it down by component. I know my colleague, the COO, they do this every quarter where they forward a report of vacancies to the minister. And maybe when we compare the appointment of service providers, we compare it with the areas where these service providers are. If most of these service providers and the value of the money is in the line function, is in my component, which is called the PMU unit, it is because in the PMU unit we deal with built environment activities. We deal with town planning, we deal with engineering work. In NASP, it was NASP service providers. The 25 NASP service providers are in 50 municipalities. And all of those service providers, they are under PMU. They're not in the support component. And that's where the bigger budget is. The support staff and the support systems, and we would love to get all of this. The most officials will tell you that if we can have all of these resources in-house, it makes our work much, much easier. It shortens the turnaround time, because we know that the procurement process is very cumbersome. When we end up going to the market to appoint service providers, it is because we have thought about it We would prefer to have them in-house. We would prefer them to be appointed by the department, because it means that anyone who's working for the department, even if it's for short-term contract, that service, that individual or that personnel, you are able to have access to it, and you are able to ask him to work overtime because he's in your payroll. So I would say that by any standard, the figure, the number of service providers that we are utilizing in the department is still very minimal. And I think considering the amount of work that is required by this department and the budget that we have to oversee, I don't think that we've been extravagant. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think though there might be some follow-up, but because of time, we have to thank you for the responses. Then we have to go to another presentation. Then the last one is green paper.
My colleague, Dr. Sokopo, will be leading us on the green paper.
Dr. Sokopo, will you please go straight to the problem?
Yes. thank you. I will try to go directly to the progress. I will also use the printed document. But before I deal with the progress, I just want to highlight that there has been a number of concerns that has been raised, including the portfolio committee, about the time that it has taken, in terms of the plan, the time that it will take to develop the green paper, and what are the reasons. So I'm trying to address all those issues that have been asked by the portfolio committee. I'm also highlighting the fact that in the development of the green paper, we have the National Development Plan as the anchor. In addition, there is the Integrated Urban Development Framework that some of the portfolio committees also have participated in. And also there's a green paper in rural development and spatial planning. All those are influencing how we are then developing the green paper. Also, the reason why we're taking long in terms of the process is because we want to develop a evidence-based policy. And so how do we then do the evidence policy-based policy? We start with identifying the issues, because if we don't do that, then when we develop the green paper, then we will be confronted with mistargeting. We also continue and do and analyze what are the issues that are coming up, because we remember that we also have a 20-year review that have highlighted certain issues. The National Development Plan also has highlighted certain challenges regarding the settlement issues. So if we don't do that kind of analysis, then we stand to be confronted with the risk of unreliable basis for which we're developing the policy. The decisions that we are making will not be based on evidence. Also, that eventually we will miss the context in which we are working. So those are some of the issues that we are confronted with. Second issues are around the process. We have a draft conceptual framework that we have developed, Chair. And why are we doing that? It's because we have to identify the outcomes first. Remember that since 2009, this government has adopted an outcome-based approach. So we need to be clear, what outcomes do we want to achieve before we do anything? And the conceptual framework is assisting us to identify all those things. And the risk, if we don't do that, is that we might have a policy that might not achieve what we want to achieve. If we don't go through all that process, and it's a process, Chair. Also, the issue of consultative process that is needed. There's a long consultative process with the provinces, with the municipalities, with other government departments, with the professional bodies, with also the banks and all the other parties that I play in terms of the private sector. Those are people that need to be consulted before and during the development of the Green Paper and also after the development of the Green Paper. There's also the issues of the monitoring and evaluation issues that we need to be dealing with as part of the development process. And the risk also is that once we leave one day the department, somebody has to go back and evaluate whether we achieve what we wanted to achieve or not. And if we don't address that during the process, then people will not know what is it that we wanted to achieve. And we are guarding against that because the experiences that we had in the past 20 years is telling us that at times, even when we look at the current housing white paper, we're not sure what the people wanted to achieve and why certain decisions were made. So we don't want to be confronted with the same thing again, Chair. Also, what we're going to address, as you all know, that it has not changed the constitutional mandate. It has not changed. So we need to address the issues of the constitutional mandate and the expanded mandate of the department through the Green Paper and what emerged in all the other documents that I have mentioned. Major issue that we wanted to address is the issues around weak spatial targeting. How we have done it thus far, we have developed the conceptual framework as indicated, and also what we have done, as the Green Paper is a long-term document. It will cover the next 20 years in terms of development of human settlements. However, for the next 5 years, which is now the coming of the new term of office, what we looked at is that what are the things that we can start implementing now? Because it's the same individuals that will then be developing the Green Paper. What are the things that we can start implementing now? And all those things that we needed to be implementing, we have already put them in the medium strategic framework that we're developing for 2014-2019, the MTSF, medium term strategic framework. Those are the issues that we've highlighted, also the issues around adequate housing and improve quality environments. We've also dealt with the issues around the property market. We've also dealt with the issues around the capacity. And all those things, when we are now have a fully-fledged Green Paper, they will also be addressed there. But we did not want to wait. We've put it in the next 5 years, that in the next 5 years, these are the burning issues that we need to be focusing on. Also, you have on page around the summary of what is going to be addressed in the Green Paper. I've also highlighted what are the success factors in order for us to develop a good Green Paper. I've highlighted the issues around knowledge-based policy development, the right skills that we required, issues around communication and support, and so forth. And also remember, there's a diagram that is there in the National Development Plan around a holistic approach. If we want to do this thing right, we need to adopt a holistic approach, and this is the approach that we wanted to adopt in the development of the Green Paper. What I'm talking about, Chair, in terms of the MTSF, if you look at the slide that talks about towards transforming human settlements, that is what we have put already in the MTSF. So, and that is going to also be expanded on in terms of the Green Paper. And we also look at the manifesto, Chair, what is it that we need to be looking at in the next 5 years, the issues around the at least 1 million housing opportunities, the basic infrastructure, informal settlements upgrading, all those issues will already addressed in the MTSF, and we will be taking them forward in terms of the Green Paper. What we have done is in the table, Chair, in the table where that highlights what has been completed and what has not been completed, and the tables themselves, it's not the whole plan. It's just a third of the plan that I'm presenting to you, because in January I did come to the House and presented the plan that consists of six phases: conceptualization phase, development phase, consultation phase, revision phase, finalization phase, and the closure phase. So I only highlighted in the presentation only the conceptual phase and the development phase, and highlighted to you what has been done in each one of those and what has not been done. As you see that we mostly done the conceptualization phase, but the development phase is incomplete. We had been also confronted with a lot of a number of challenges in terms of the development, because we were expecting then that, yes, we are expecting that by this term of office, we will not have a complete green paper, but we have done so much. But unfortunately, there were a number of challenges that we faced with, among others, is a clear understanding of what needs to be done, and we have to sell the issues that these are the things that we need to be looking at. Also, the absence of resources that we were confronted with. And also, I also came to the committee last year to say that there was an MOU that we were supposed to have with the science and technology that also promised that we will then they will be partners in the development of the green paper. It also took longer than we expected, and that thus I'm highlighting that have very negative effect on the progress that we would have made if we did not have those challenges. Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Dr. Sokobo. But in your key phases, I thought maybe it was going to be good for us to know the time frames of each and every, so that we know that maybe by this time this will be done. All right, honourable members.
Silence means consent. You've summed it up very well, the time frame. I think the issue we're having is the time frame. It's not an issue of circumventing the process or fast-tracking the process without doing due diligence. But we just want time frames so that this thing doesn't drag far too long unnecessarily.
Yes, Chairperson, I think we note the progress, and we are quite satisfied. And actually, what really satisfies me is to notice some of the elements that are included here, which have come from the discussions of the committee. I think we appreciate that very much, to see ourselves in the green paper. I won't go through them, Chairperson, because of time, but I've noted some of them.
Thank you. I think we've come to an end of our meeting, but the chairperson proposed that we meet tomorrow to adopt the legacy report.
What time? Between 1 and 2.
Between 1 and 2. It's still with her. Okay. Between 1 and 2. Let's come together and finalize everything and see that we've done our job. Lunch is served. Help yourselves there. There is finger lunch. Thank you very much.